Rick, and I'm grateful. It's an echo. That's really kind of weird. I did not come into this program to get somebody sober. I was kind of pissed off that she had to stop drinking. We had most of our fun when we were drinking or doing drugs. It was how we connected. And the only problem that I had with her drinking was that her bridge game would fall apart. Her bidding would get totally out of control, and we wouldn't get any points that night. And I'm competitive, and we would regularly get points, so we were on our way to becoming, master bridge players. And so one night I said, you've been drinking. And we did that dance. No, I haven't. Yes, you have. And I'm not going to go tonight. And it was, well, if you don't go, we're going to have a big fight. And I said, if we're going to have a fight, I'm going to fight. I'm not going to fight because we went. I'll fight because we didn't go. And we didn't go. And I don't know who slept on a couch that night, but in the morning, she was looking in the Yellow Pages for some kind of recovery program. And that was kind of the beginning of it. I tried to find Al-Anon at that time. And I failed. I mean, I couldn't find a meeting. She started going to AA, and I didn't go. I didn't really support her not drinking. I continued to drink Friday night. I'd have my bottle of Amaretto, and and after 5 years, she had stopped going to AA, and about 5 years later, the issue came up again. Not over bridge, but there was a bunch of relapses along the way, and well, I'm trying to think of how that even worked. But ultimately, she went into a recovery program, and I went into aftercare. We had two children at this point in time. One who was 8 or 9, and the other was 13 or 14. And they said that I should go to Al-Anon, and they helped me find a meeting. And, at this point in time, there was this place in Concord that had an AA meeting, an Al-Anon meeting, an Alateen meeting, a preteen meeting, and babysitting. they just don't have that anymore. And I was living in San Ramon at the time, so we drove out, and I got the children into their, the Alateen, the preteen, and then I found my way into the Al-Anon meeting, and it was a little late, and I got in, and I'm the kind of guy where I'll raise my hand and say, I don't get what you're saying, and ask a question. And for some reason, I didn't say a word. I listened. I was confused because, Al-Anons have their own language, and I understood the words, but I didn't know what they meant. But I got something out of it. The meeting, this was a long time ago, and the meeting was about, expectations, being future resentments. And I remember she said something, and I thought, nah, you know what, that's not right. But I didn't interfere. And a few minutes later, I kind of got what she was saying, but then she said something else about resentments. And I said, nah, you know what? You got to have goals. And but then she brought it to another place, and that happened again. And then finally, I really got it. And I was so excited. And when I got back into the vehicle with my children, I said, boy, you know, this was great. And I told them all about my, you know, what I experienced. And they had the same reaction in their meetings. They got something out of it also. Mm-hmm. I can look back now and you know, they say it takes a village, and Al-Anon, Alateen, and Preteen were my village. Wow. It really worked for them. The 14-year-old stayed until he was 20. The 10-year-old at this point stayed until she was 19. Neither of them transitioned, but since then, my daughter has found the rooms and is pretty active in her program. I was very fortunate. I my whole life, things have always been easy. Everything came easy, with the exception of one time in kindergarten, I got sent home with a couple of colors because I didn't know my colors well enough. And, you know, I'm colorblind, and that kind of explained it, but nobody told me at the time. So, you know, the one time I struggled was in kindergarten, and, you know, life was always pretty good in terms of my own accomplishments. But I hit a point in my late 20s where I lost that, and I started to struggle, and I didn't know why, and I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong, and I was looking for something to get my mojo back, and I wasn't happy, and I couldn't figure it out, and I tried, you know, a little bit of therapy, and that didn't work. I tried Scientology, and that didn't work. And I was lost and confused. And then, you know, my qualifier went into program, and I was told that I had to go to Al-Anon. And her brother was in AA at the time. And I said, you know, this 12-step stuff, does it really work? And he says, yeah, it works if you work it. And I said, and it's going to solve my problems? And he says, it could. And I'm thinking, you know, Woody Allen was in therapy at this point for 13 years. And I'm thinking, idiot, you know, he could have spent a buck a week and got the same result. Now I'll tell you, I passed that 13-year therapy thing about 7 years ago. And we'll talk about that later. So I wanted to get my mojo back, and I told you things came easy to me. My qualifier, I started Al-Anon on the 18th of October, and she had another week or so to go in rehab. And when she got out, we went and visited her sponsor, and her sponsor and her sponsor's husband would go to this rehab center and do service. And so that's how she met her. And so now we're at their house, and her husband comes up to me and says, have you got a sponsor? And I said, no. And he goes, well, I'll be your sponsor. Come over next Tuesday. So that's how I got my sponsor. It's been 31 years. He's still my sponsor. And I'm really grateful for him, to him. So I go over to his house, and he says, well, you're here. So that takes care of one, two, and three. And we went right into step four, which he gave me the, you know, these handout sheets. It was the AA Fears, Resentments worksheets. So I need to back up a little bit. Some of the things that I before, well, while all this was going on, you know, and I'm attending meetings, you know, that Abraham Lincoln says most people just make themselves about as happy as they want to be, or something like that. And I had shared in a meeting that now I'm probably in Al-Anon now for a month or two, maybe three, and I clung on to that thing, and I said, I'm gonna, you know, my goal is to make myself as happy as I can be. And someone cross-talked, and I, you know, I'm so grateful that she did. She was one of these people that, you know, when I was early in the program, every word she said was like so insightful. And she shared right after I did, and she said, you know, my goal is to feel the feelings. And I went, oh, you know, well, I knew, you know, I liked that. And I had a couple of feelings. I had anger and, you know, yeah, anger. I had a lot of anger. But not much else. And so, you know, it started this journey for me, doing the steps. Well, I want to say one more thing before I start. You know, I love this program. I don't want anything changed. Word for word, keep it as it is. But God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change bothers me. Serenity is not a gift. It's something you work for, something that you have to work hard for. And doing the 12 steps turns out a way, for me at least, to get that sense of well-being, that sense of serenity, that sense that I can do it and it's going to be okay. So we start doing the steps, and you know, I mean, I buzz through four. To preface this, I did my 12 steps in about 4 or 5 weeks, my thorough inventory. I'm still doing step four. Not adequately, according to my therapist. But what I got out of that first go through on step four was my resentments, my fears were all around money. And you know, when I saw that, when I saw the people that I resented, the institutions that I resented, the future that I feared, everything had to do with money. And I, you know, wow, I've got to figure out how to deal with this. So, you know, admit to God, to yourself, to another human being, the exact natures of your wrong. Okay, I got a problem. I got an issue with money. Although things came easy for me, they did not come so easy for my stepfather. And you know, we were poor. You know, food stamps and in and out of different. He was in and out of different jobs. Had a hard time holding on to jobs. And you know, there were times that were just really tough. And I was afraid that when I was older, when I was my age that I am now, that I wouldn't have enough money to afford PG&E, so I could put my head in the oven and kill myself. And I lived with that for a long time. So now I've got to admit to God, but you know, you're here, so that takes care of one, two, and three. And I didn't have a higher power, and I didn't believe in God. You know, I was brought up Catholic, and I wanted nothing to do with that God. And that was the only God I knew. So I had to, you know, I was struggling with that. And the good news is that I got step one and I got step three. Now I'll tell you, I did not do the steps in order. They say you should. I did them the way they came. It probably, well, I don't know how long it took me. I've had so many versions of a higher power. And I'll tell you the story about that too. But I did get a sense of step one, that I was powerless over things. And that one came really simple. It was really simply put to me when I realized that, you know, do you ever try to help somebody that doesn't want your help, and then they get pissed off at you, and then you get pissed off at them because they're pissed off at you, and now just because you're trying to help somebody, you're having this argument? Oh yeah, all the time. I'm not going to do that to myself anymore. I see why that's a duh, and I'm not going to do it. But that was kind of my first recognition of this powerlessness, and how things get out of control really easy when I stick my nose into a place where it doesn't belong. And then there was step three. And I told you it was October 18th when I went to my first Al-Anon meeting. And it was January 21st when I got step three in the ODAT. I was reading my ODAT every day because it was brand new. And when I got to the 21st, it was on step three. And at the bottom, you know, they have today's reminder or whatever it is. We, ignorant of ourselves, beg often our own harm, which the wise power denies us for our good. And thus do we profit by the loss of our prayers. Anthony and Cleopatra. And I went, wow. You know, these guys had one third of the world, and it wasn't enough. Now, at the time, I thought it was kind of greed. You know, they just wanted more. Now I can look back and say, oh, they were just really insecure. You know, so they had to deal with that insecurity somehow. But, you know, they had control of one third of the world, and it wasn't enough. And this, for me, that was, I know what I want, but I got no idea what I need. And I realized at that point that what I wanted may not be in my best interest. And that was that was a big deal for me, because I was driven by wants. All of my fears and resentments were over wants. But not knowing what I needed was an issue that I didn't figure that out for maybe 10 more years. But what I did get out of that was the idea that since I didn't know that what I wanted was in my best interest or not, when I didn't get what I wanted, I let it go. Now, prior to January 21st, if I didn't get what I wanted, I raised hell. And I pushed and I alienated and I argued and I just, you know, I mean, I was tough to deal with. And it was a few days later, I mean, it happened quickly, where I didn't get what I wanted. And all of a sudden, I said, whoa, let it go. Be patient. The next day, where's the silver lining in this? That was the question that I asked myself. I'm not getting what I want here. Where's the silver lining? And, you know, I mean, a day or two later, the silver lining appeared. And I went, whoa, that was cool. You know, I mean, and I was off to the races. But I still didn't have a higher power. Now my program just revolved around waiting for the good thing to happen, because it always had, and you know, and it was still, as it turns out. So now I'm going through step 6 and 7, oh, 7, I guess, humbly asking to forgive our shortcomings, whatever it is. And I don't have a higher power, but I had a mantra. And so I would just repeat every day, driving down the street, you know, waiting at a stoplight, whatever it was, God help me get over my fear of money. Now, the good thing is that during this course of events, you know, what this inventory started me on was a period of self-discovery. I have always been really good with places and things. You know, understanding things and how they all fit together, understanding places and how it all fits together. It came natural to me, but I had no idea who I was, and I had no idea who other people were. They were kind of things, but I didn't know anything about, you know, the personal. I knew about the sociology, not the psychology. So this was all very new. And as a result, I'm starting to get insights into my own behavior on a, you know, if not an hourly basis, certainly a daily basis. And that list grew from money to this and that and this and that. And now I've got this 20 word mantra, you know, help me get over this, this over there. And I would just keep repeating that because that's the best I can do. And, you know, you don't have to be successful at, you don't have to do step 4 perfectly. Step 5, it helps if you admit to, you know, yourself and another human being. I certainly wasn't going to God with that, so that wasn't perfect. Was I ready? You know, I came into this program looking for a way to get my mojo back, so I was ready. That's probably the most thorough of all the steps I did at the time. And now I have to, you know, ask for help to get rid of this stuff, to this thing I don't believe in. But I'm thinking if I just keep it in the top of my mind, it'll work. That's what I did. But now it's off to step 8. And so I made 3 lists. I made a list of my family. I made a list of my close friends, and I made a list of everybody else, because I had offended everybody at this point, not understanding why with most of them, but knowing that I had. And I made amends to my family and to my close friends, and I did not make amends to any of those associates. And to this day, here's what I can tell you. When I see my family and I see my friends, there's never a charge. But when I see those associates or I think about them, there's a little charge. It's a little uncomfortable feeling. Now, I'm not willing to pay the price to get over that uncomfortable feeling by going out and making amends to these guys. It's a choice. And I'm willing to put up with the slight discomfort that I have when I think about them once every 3 or 4 months or weeks or years, whatever it is, because that's going to be less painful for me than, going up and say, hey, it's been 20 years. Well, remember that time when, gosh. So I guess now is a very appropriate time to talk about what I did to those people and why I did it. Things always came easy to me. So here I am at this new job. I thought I bluffed my way into the position. It was a new job when it didn't exist. It was a new position when it didn't exist before. And during the interview process, the guy says, you know how to read blueprints? Sure. So he shows me a picture of a ladder, which I couldn't even recognize. Didn't know enough to look at the title block where it says ladder. And then he points out, oh, yeah, sure, so I start this job. He gave me the job, and he gave me so much more money than I was asking for, because I was, my qualifier at this point was like 5 months pregnant, and he said, I know what it takes to raise a family. I got hired there the 1st of October. And on Super Bowl Sunday, he bent down to check the chlorine content in the swimming pool, had an aneurysm, and that was it. He didn't pass away, but he came back to work July 5th, a shell of what he was. I mean, he was an incredibly vibrant, strong individual. He lasted about 3 months before they convinced him that take the early retirement. And, they took care of him, but he was going to be the person that taught me how to do the job, and now he wasn't there. So one day, it was a Thursday, and I remember that, and it was an Al-Anon meeting in Pleasant Hill, and I don't know what brought me out there. I was still living in San Ramon at the time. And it was a step one meeting. And I remember walking out of that meeting, understanding what I had been doing wrong, or what I had done wrong. And, I told you things came easy to me. The report cards you get in grammar school, they say, natural leader, all this stuff. I was always successful at everything I did. And now I'm in over my head and I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing, but I still felt like I had to lead. Matter of fact, I got to write the job description for the position I had because it didn't exist at the time. And, it was, I put me in charge. And I was, the image that I have, you're probably, a lot of you too young to remember, Nikita Khrushchev at the UN, taking off his shoe and pounding it. Yeah, that was my style. I would yell louder, I would push harder. I had absolutely no idea what I was talking about, but I was going to get my way because I knew what had to be done. And I didn't know enough to have the finesse to make it happen smoothly. But if I didn't get if I didn't get what I wanted, if I didn't get my way, I would have that tantrum. And, I was just pissing everybody off. I just had a thought that I regret that. And I kind of regret that, but, it is what it is. And it was what it was. And that's not what I do, although my wife may disagree with me. But I made the amends that were important to me at the time. And I really try to live that. Well, I don't try. I mean, this program now is pretty easy to me. It comes pretty easily to me. And it's a part of who I am, it's a part of what I do, it's a part of how I behave. And I want to qualify all that. I'm not perfect by any means. But life is good. And life is good because I have an attitude of gratitude. When I don't get my way, I may not like it and I may pout a little bit, but I'm not ranting and raving, screaming and trying to force the issue. What I found in these rooms, there's a whole lot of lessons. One is I've got to mind my own business. And when I keep my nose out of your business, things go smooth. The next thing is I've got to mind my own business. And what that means is there are things that need to be done in my life. And if I don't do them, then life doesn't work out as well as it could. But if I mind my business and take care of myself and do the things that must be done, then a lot of problems that could come up don't come up. So mind my own business, mind my own business. I guess the biggest gift that I got, I told you about my fear of getting to this age and not having enough money to stick to afford PG&E. God, that was a tough one. But I learned here that, fear, I call it a negative fantasy. It doesn't happen in the present. Fear is something that occurs in the future. We're not afraid of what happened in the past. That's gone. We're not afraid of what's going on right now. Right now is okay. We're afraid about what's going to happen next, in the next second, in the next minute, tomorrow, next year. And I've become really attuned to, I have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. I know what I want to happen. And then I realized that, the things that I feared never really happened. And if something akin to that fear did occur, it was 5% of what I thought it was going to be, because I thought it was going to be the end of the world. And instead, it was a firecracker. And it's become a choice. I don't know what tomorrow brings, but I'd rather it be a fantasy that I'm going to marry the princess, for you ladies out there, the prince, than think it's going to be a disaster, because they're both improbable. And if I'm going to have an improbable thought, I'm going to have what it makes me happy, not makes me miserable. And so it's become a choice for me. The good news is that it works. It works for me. I have had plenty of opportunity to make that choice. My daughter may be listening in. A few years ago, a year and a half ago, I don't even remember, it was in September. She had some exploratory surgery. She was told to stop drinking, stop smoking. She kind of did a little bit too late. When she got out of the hospital, she had a seizure. Fortunately, she was at her boyfriend's house, and he got her to the hospital right away. And she was out of it for a few days. I was a little scared, not really scared, but a little scared. And when I found out that she was okay, that they were going to keep her in the hospital for a few days, and then she was going to go back to her boyfriend's house to, recover. They said at the time they're going to keep her in there for a week. So, her boyfriend drinks, smokes pot, and knows nothing about program other than he doesn't like her being an Al-Anon, because she usually ends up after a meeting feeling her feelings. Feeling your feelings is tough for a spouse or a boyfriend. And so I called him up and told him how unsupportive I was of my qualifier, and how I said I don't have many regrets, but that's a tough one, that lack of support. And I did make amends to her for that, and that's another story. But he's a sharp guy, well educated. He agreed to get Al-Anon 12x12. And he had a week to, he ordered it online, had a week to get the book and make himself familiar with it, so that he'd have an inkling of how to behave when my daughter got back to his house. I mean, this guy's 50 years old. We just turned 50. So my daughter calls me up the next day and says, I checked myself out of the hospital against doctor's orders. And and we had a nice conversation. I didn't press it. I didn't tell her she was making a mistake. I stayed out of her business as much as I wanted to, but the good news is that, I came into this program believing that I was the smartest guy in the room, that I had an answer for everything, that I knew it was best. The nice thing about this program is that you can take the meek and make them assertive, and take the arrogant and make them humble. And so I was afraid that I would say something that would be the wrong thing. And I did not want to be responsible for anything negative happening. If it was gonna, if something negative was gonna happen, then it had to be on her and not me. So during the course of the next probably year, she's working with a therapist, she's working with a group, she's working with a doctor, and they're giving her, pills to help her not enjoy alcohol much, but she's being weaned off of alcohol. And all under this medical supervision. It went on for a long time. Not a week went by where we wouldn't talk, but never once did I bring up how she was doing. I never asked her, how's it going? I was curious, but, asking that question was more about dealing with my feelings than dealing with hers. And I did not want to make this about me because, that's a recipe for disaster. I get misty-eyed a lot, and I gave myself an over-under on this one. I said, over-under is 3. Under 3, I'm going to, over 3. Mm-hmm. So that's 1. So she called me up at one point. Now she's working 2 programs. She's working Al-Anon. She's working AA. And she, we're talking, and she goes, I was really kind of butthurt. I think that's her phrase. I'm really kind of butthurt that you didn't take interest in how I was doing. And and now I realize that you were detaching with love, and that was probably the best thing that you could have done for you, and probably the best thing you could have done for me. Yeah. Filled my heart up. He's been sober for a while now, and I'm not sure how long, whether or not, it's A, none of my business, and B, it's, everybody knows sobriety is a tenuous thing. But she's working a hard program, and, it's wonderful. We get to talk about it. We talk about it a lot, because we're both doing inner child work. So, a while back, still doing step 4, still in this process of self-discovery. I made the unfortunate comment to the therapist one day, I'm not getting what I want from my wife. She said, well, maybe it's because you're not ready to accept it. Shit, you're going to make this about me, huh? So that started, the inner child work, trying to reparent, give him what he needed, what he lacked. And it's, it's been an interesting process. It got me over my fear of going downhill on a bike at high speeds. Is that not a lot? Okay. And I've developed quite a relationship with him, and we heard about driving drunk earlier. You know, I used to drive drunk all the time. I started getting really uncomfortable with it because, you know, you can't keep pushing the envelope forever. It's going to backfire. At some point, you're going to pay the price. And I mentioned this in therapy, and I said, you know, I can't do this. Luck will run out, and when it runs out, you know, at the very least, it's going to be very expensive. I don't have the right to do that to my spouse, you know, to put her through that financial disaster. And Lord knows, you know, I might hurt somebody. And she said, well, what about you? And I'll be fine. And she goes, yeah, children never think they're going to get hurt. So on that day, I took the car keys away from my inner teenager, and he hasn't driven since. Well, he drives, but not under the influence. It's been a real I want to say wild ride. I am so glad, so fortunate to have found these, you know, this room, to have found this program. I was so bitter before I came into these rooms. I had a lot, but I wasn't satisfied with any of it. You know, I wanted more. And, you know, now I realize that, you know, my generation kind of hit, not kind of, I mean, we hit the lottery. You know, life is so much easier for us than it is for our children, our grandchildren. You know, I mean, this has been just, I'm incredibly grateful. I'm incredibly grateful that I was born in San Francisco and not 650 miles south in Mexico, and how different my life would be. That I was born in at a time, in an age, I call it the wealthiest area of the wealthiest state in the wealthiest country in the history of the world. Nothing that I did, but here I am. And instead of being living a life that's resentful, I get to live a life that appreciates that doesn't take that for granted. That it's a gift that not many of us are going to get, because, you know, we're seeing that decline in the curve. We're the most pampered peasants the world has ever seen. And that attitude of gratitude is what I've got here. That ability to make a choice to not stay in fear. That, you know, to recognize that the things that have caused me the greatest grief were things that I never saw coming. So as a result, I only experienced them once when they happened. I didn't experience them over and over and over in anticipation. I am never going to sit here and worry about something that's the worst case scenario and experience it over and over and over again as if it actually happened. Because, you know, when you're in that fear and it's the worst case scenario, you're feeling the feelings. I refuse to do that to myself. And I've been fortunate enough where, for me, it works. One last thought, if I can remember it. I knew what I wanted. I didn't know what I needed. And then, I was given this list of needs. There's all kinds of needs. Maslow's hierarchy, was that food, shelter, and clothing. Yeah, got those. Then there's all these emotional needs. I recognized that I have two needs that are overwhelming in my life. The need to connect and the need to matter. And I call that's my hard wiring. That's the thing that around which all other subroutines gravitate are written. And what I also noticed is that all the people who are close to me, all of my closest friends, also need to matter, also need to connect. And it's what I see as driving their personas also. Because we are, we're attracted to what we are, whether we know what we are or not. How much time do I have? Couple minutes. What I also learned about these needs is that when they're being met, I'm happy. And when they're not being met, I'm not happy. Or I have comfortable feelings or uncomfortable feelings. And so when I'm having an uncomfortable feeling, I get to look now and say, boy, I wonder what needs not being addressed. What it's either being threatened or it's being actually taken away from me. And once I know what need is being addressed, then I can establish a strategy that addresses the need instead of the feeling, because the feeling is probably going to take me in the wrong direction. Didn't necessarily learn that in Al-Anon, but it certainly applies to my daily life, and it applies to minding my own business. Anyhow, thank you all for coming tonight. Thank you all for being here, being a part of my process. Thank you for calling, Franny. I'll talk to you later. It's been a wonderful ride, and I'm once again just grateful that I'm a member of Al-Anon and a member of this life. It's something worth doing. Anyhow, thank you.